This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We've got three absolutely tremendous hours coming up for you as we have to get you set for the football season. We have to get you set for our tremendous Sunday in baseball. And we've got some UFC fights that are going down tonight. It is International Fight Week. It has been on like Donkey Kong all week long. And we've got ourselves an exciting card. So we'll be keeping you guys up to date on that all throughout the night. Additionally, we're going to be taking a look at this lone baseball game that we've got right now. Very much a front-heavy card here on this Saturday, but that said, we've right now got 1-1 between the Nationals and the Angels, so we'll be keeping up there, and we're also going to get you guys a little bit of college football tonight as well. Joining me in 30 minutes, Spencer McLaughlin. He does a tremendous job as the Southern Utah, actually, play-by-play voice. Does great work over at Locked On CFB. He's going to be joining me. We're going to preview some of these teams for the upcoming season. I know that he's got some thoughts on the SEC, so we're going to be diving in on that in about 30 minutes, a little bit over an hour from now. Going to be taking a look at what we've gotten here in the NBA offseason thus far and the NBA draft with Sheldon Wolman. He does a tremendous job over at Just Utility Sports, and he's going to be joining me. We're going to be breaking down all that we've seen here in the last few days, and did see a notable trade with Lonzo Ball getting shipped out for Isaac Okoro. So what that means in terms of the Eastern Conference, we'll be taking a look at that and so much more. And how about if we, first things first, do lead off by talking about the big event that we've got here tonight. We're going to recap a little bit of baseball as well, since most of these games have already won final, but and this is a UFC card that, in my opinion, is one of the best that we have seen in quite some time. And I mean, the way that they have been able to put together some of these events have really been second to none. But that said, you've right now got a few fights that are going down. We've got a few that have just gone into the books. And I know that this is a main event card that started right around about 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. So if you have yet to dive in on the Topuria versus Oliveira fight, you still have plenty of time to be able to do so there. So have no fear on that front. But we do have ourselves a lot with regards to some of these more pick'em fights as well. So we are going to be having ourselves a relatively fun one there. And that said, if you take a look at some of these earlier cards as well, we had the we've got this fight in progress with Benil Dariush going up against Renato Moicano. So we're going to be keeping our eyes on that. And with Dariush, he closed as in a lot of places, very, very slight favorite. I know that that was a rather high round prop as well. So we'll be diving in on that front. And personally, I didn't take a lot of action with regards to this UFC card. I know that Scott Seidenberg, he does a tremendous job with regards to Live Bet Saturday. He was talking about perhaps a decision in the Oliveira versus Topuria fight. And I do think that's very interesting that Topuria went up in weight for this fight. He's currently the minus $4 favorite. That means that he'll probably be a little bit more nimble. But at the same time, you've got both of these guys who pretty much always finish in fights. But with that, shall we say, weight difference and the way that neither of these guys really go down, I think that that makes things very interesting in general with regards to this fight. And I must point out, in the Moicano versus Dariush fight that is going down right about now, you did see Dariush actually open up as a plus 130 underdog before this closed as a pick'em. So we did see a lot of steam that came in there. And then we've seen a little bit of steam with regards to this fight with Joshua Van. This will be the next fight going against Brandon Royval. I know that I've had a few guests I've talked to over the last few days be really taking a little bit of a liking to Royval. I know that Tanner Kern, who does great work over at DraftKings, he was talking about this, and I have a very, very sky-high round prop of right now over 2.5. That is at a minus 240, and I think that this one might be one of the more interesting fights of the night because Royval, he's taken quite a few fights here over the last few months. He's been able to build himself up. It's been a little bit up-down all around from last few years, so I'm very interested to see what he's going to be able to provide and what we're going to be able to get there. And I do think that with regards to this fight card in general, we should maybe see a few underdogs being able to prevail, because really the lone underdog that has been able to get the job done was Peyton Talbot, and that was in the last fight that wrapped up. Talbot was able to win over Felipe Lima as about a plus 125, plus 130 underdog. So we're going to be doing our best to be able to keep up with these, as I know typically when it comes to some of these sports books, it's a little bit difficult to be able to get the live feed on some of these fights, but certainly going to be keeping up with those, especially that Oliveira versus Topuria fight. I think that one is going to be some great cinema, and that one should be probably starting up at about 90 or so minutes. Always depends upon how these fights go down a little bit earlier, but we'll be taking a look on that front, as it is Cashing Out with myself, Greg Eubes-Peterson, right here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. And We do have ourselves just a lot in general to be able to decipher, and what we do want to take a look at is what has been a wild day in baseball thus far, as we have seen the underrated baseball for the season be in that neighborhood above 53% or so, and we might be getting an under in this Angels versus Washington Nationals game, currently 1-1 in the top of the seventh inning there, but we saw ourselves a lot of blowouts here on this Saturday, and I do always think that that's very intriguing, and I know that's something that Scott Seidenberg talked about in the previous show, but it is worth bringing up. Typically, when you see a team get blown out in the previous day, it's because it's a case where they don't necessarily utilize a lot of their high leverage relievers, so I would actually rather be backing a team if they lost by, say, 7 runs rather than 1 run in the previous game, because if you got blown out by 7 runs, guess who's coming in? The long reliever that typically doesn't see a lot of burn, you're not going to be utilizing those high leverage guys, and we saw that fully on display here on Saturday with the Tampa Bay Rays getting the job done 11-3 over the Baltimore Orioles. We recall for the Tampa Bay Rays in the game on Friday, and I took the money line on the Tampa Bay Rays. Felt really good when they were up 6-0. Not so good when they gave up 22 runs. They get just completely lambasted on Friday. They come back on Saturday. They get the job done. Now, sometimes it's just a case where a team has gone cold, and we have certainly seen that for the Mets. They lose by kind of 9-2 to the Pittsburgh Pirates, and sometimes you just have this happen. And it's very ironic that both of these New York teams have been going into a swoon in the same at the same time. For the Yankees on Saturday, they got rocked by the A's. They lose that game by a count of 7-0. And for the Yankees offense, by the way, 4 runs or fewer in all but 3 of their last 16 games. I just don't know where this has gone. Maybe they were just overperforming to begin the season. Maybe they're just hitting a little bit of what I always like to call a baseball ditch. But, I mean, this has been very stark, and it's been very strange what we've seen out of them, to say the least. Aaron Judge is really the constant for the team. He's been a little bit cold here in the last few games, so that has certainly been hurting them a little bit. But, I mean, with these New York teams, it just has been very intriguing what we've seen out of them. Now, sometimes you have to take a look at the splits. Like, for the New York Mets, I can tell you why they're starting to go into a little bit more of a losing streak. They just have not been the same team when they've been away from home rather than at home. This New York Mets team is actually 19-24 when they are on the road, and some of these, shall we say, losses, some of these losing streaks, they can be a little bit more explainable. Some of these, they just come from out of nowhere. But I know that the Mets have been playing quite a few road games recently, 29-12 when they've been at home thus far this season. So that's something that can explain maybe a little bit of something. And then you just have some things that are just not able to be explained. And I mean, I've talked about this on the show over the last few days, and we've seen it over the last few weeks with this team, the Milwaukee Brewers, and their home and road splits. The offense starting to get a little bit more online at home, entering into the series against the Colorado Rockies, where they won by a count of 5-0 against the Colorado Rockies, but I mean, they were averaging coming into the series about 3.6, 3.7 runs per game at home, and then they were scoring about 5.6 runs per game away from home, a nearly 2-run difference between home and road. Now, this is something that's a little bit harder to explain, and you just bank on a little bit of positivity in general. Like, there are some of these splits where you just sit there and you think, all right, this is something where it's explainable. Like, with the New York Mets perhaps struggling a little bit on the road, it depends upon the schedule. You just have teams in general that maybe they're built for a specific ballpark, and we see that happen from time to time. Typically, you do see that a little bit more with a team like the Colorado Rockies at elevation. They've actually been worse at home rather than on the road, so been a little bit of a reverse split there. But when it comes to some of these things that are really hard to explain, typically you do see things iron out. And I go back actually to the New York Mets. I believe it was a year ago. They were one of those teams that had a really demonstrative home and road split with regards to their offense as well. That's certainly something that you do want to be eyeing up. And now that we are getting to that midway point of the season, most of these teams have above 82, 83 games under their belt. Now you're able to find some really good value on it, because now a lot of books have priced in, all right, this team has been relatively hot at home, this team has been relatively tough on the road. And when you have like a home and road split, like for example, Isak Paredes of the Houston Astros, he's always been a pull hitter. He's going to hit a few more home runs out there in Houston rather than on the road. That's something where the split is very, very explainable. That's a situation where the split is like, okay, I see why he's doing a little bit better at home rather than on the road. If he'd have a massive road road split versus a home split. Then you bank on that coming back to the mean. Then you bank on that just being able to come through in general. And now I think it's progression slash regression season with a lot of these players and a lot of these teams. You see a guy with a sky-high fielding independent and a low ERA, typically that means that things are going to come back down to earth. And it's not always the case, because I still remember Tyler Anderson for many years, and he is finally experiencing that regression for the LA Angels this year. He was a guy that just seemed to overperform for a few years. Like, I still remember the year 2019. Mike Minor, for the longest of times, and hopefully there is someone out there that remembers this, he was just pitching above his head. He was getting out of all these bases-loaded jams. He was giving up walks. He wasn't getting strikeouts. And yet, every single time, he was going out there for like five innings, giving up one run, six innings, giving up one run, even though he probably should have been tagged for like four or five runs. It just felt like it was happening for an entire half of a season. Second half of the year goes straight down the toilet bowl. So I think that now is prime progression slash regression season, and teams being able to, for lack of a term, better term, be able to rise up a little bit more. Perhaps we'll see that out of the Kansas City Royals. Royals were able to go out there, got the job done against the LA Dodgers, just by kind of 9-5, and the only reason why the Dodgers were able to get a five spot is that they were able to put up four runs in the ninth inning. So this game was thorough domination. But I mean, for the Royals entering into the series against the LA Dodgers, averaging fewer than three runs per contest, is this a Royals team that's going to be rivaling the LA Dodgers in terms of run production this year? No. Are they even going to be rivaling a team like the Detroit Tigers or something like that? No, they're not. But I do think that with a team like the Royals, who have been such a good under team in their own, shall we say, region as well. I mean, the Texas Rangers are a team out there in the AL West. I mean, that's another team that's really just not been able to find it. You look at the names and you look at the production, it just doesn't add up. Those are teams that you want to be banking on as well. And that's what I'm going to be trying to find a lot of tonight here on the show. And we do have ourselves a great Sunday card, and we're going to keep you guys abreast as to what is happening with regards to that Angels versus Washington Nationals game. And we'll do that on the flip side right here on Cashing Out. I'm Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out. I'm VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. We've got ourselves a lot of action that's happening here on the Saturday night. Big giant fight card as Daniil De La Roche, he was able to get the job done over Renato Moicano for De La Roche. He was able to win by unanimous decision. This closed as right around about a pick'em in a lot of spots. As a matter of fact, here at Circa, you had Benil closed as a minus 112 favorite, and this was one where in a lot of places, Moicano, he actually opened up more around about a minus 140, minus 150. So rather pick'em fight there. De Roche, he does get it done. Next fight up is going to be Brandon Royval versus Joshua Van. That should be coming your way within the next probably like 15 or so minutes. Again, this is a fight where Van is going to be closing right around about minus 120, minus 125 with regards to the money line, way juiced up total here. You're going to be laying north of minus 220 if you're looking to go over 2.5 rounds. So that is going to be a relatively fun one. And speaking of having some fun, the LA Angels open up this seventh inning down by a count of 2-1 to the Washington Nationals. Mike Trout, he's able to send one into the lake. He gets a home run. I believe that that is number 13 of the campaign for him. So Mike Trout starting to heat up. He gets it there, and we shall see if the LA Angels are going to be able to strike for some more runs. And we do have ourselves a really good game card in general for this baseball Sunday. And you're going to get some NFL previews as well. Something that I've been doing the last few nights here on VSIN has been the Greg Peterson's random roulette in terms of the NFL, because I've got 16 straight nights here, which I wouldn't have it any other way. I love doing these shows, and I wanted to make sure that I got all 32 teams previewed, so we're going to get you guys a preview in hour number 2 and in hour number 3 in terms of some NFL previews. But how about if we do start turning forward to the Sunday card? Typically, we do get a lot more Saturday late night action. Just not here tonight. You've got one game going on between the Angels and the Washington Nationals, and now you've got the Angels with men on first and third and no outs in the seventh inning. That's always something they want to look at. The is just really, really bad bullpens, and betting against them has been very profitable this season, and I mean, boy, there's very few bullpens that are any worse than what you've got out of this Washington Nationals team. They are dead last in the National League in terms of their bullpen ERA. They brought in Zach Brzezinski in this game. 7 pitches. He has given up a home run, and he's put men on first and third. So really not doing his job there. And this is a good time to talk about what we're going to be getting in the Sunday game between the Angels and the Washington Nationals as well, because you've got another relatively high total in this game, and this will be at the bottom of the card, 929, 930, and there's a reason why you've got a pretty high total in this game. Mitchell Parker goes for the Washington Nationals, and Jack Kochanowicz is going to be on the bump for the LA Angels. And right now, that total is 9.5. Angels open up right around about a minus 130. We're seeing a lot of books taking action against them. I'm seeing right now here at Circa a minus 122 on the Angels. I'm still seeing as high as a minus 137 in some spots. But for the Washington Nationals, find them between about plus 110, plus 120, and my max buy point on the Angels was minus 122. So now we're starting to get in range here with Jack Kochanowicz, not necessarily a guy that I want to be backing too much. North of a 5 ERA, he's been giving up right around about 1.5 or so home runs per 9 innings, less than 6.5 strikeouts per 9, less than savory to say the least. But Mitchell Parker has been having a really rough run of things as well. For Mitchell Parker, he's got north of a 4.5 ERA. He's starting to give up the deep ball a little bit more, and his walks per 9 rate has gone a little bit north of 3. For Parker, he did a really nice job keeping the ball in the yard towards the beginning part of the season. Very much a pitch of contact guy. Fewer than 7 strikeouts per 9 innings, but I mean, when you start giving up the deep balls, a pitcher contact guy like Mitchell Parker is, that's where things go just disastrously bad for you, and it has been happening for the Nationals team. And even though the total is sky high, something that you do want to take note of, and I was talking about in the last segment, taking a look at some of these home and road splits, I think that this one might make sense a little bit for the Washington Nationals. They've been much better with their offense when they've been away from home rather than at home. Now, I've always thought of Washington as a little bit more of a pitcher-friendly ballpark, not necessarily a ton more, but a little bit more. But I mean, for a lot of these guys, it just feels like when they get out of D.C., they start getting in a groove. Like James Wood, giving you good wood, 22 home runs, north of 350 on base. You've had C.J. Abrams be able to step up, start moving the line a little bit more. 11 bombs, he's hitting north of 280. Even though Josh Bell doesn't necessarily give you a lot in terms of average, he's been able to slug out a double-figure amount of homers as well. And for the LA Angels, this team's handicap is so strange because we have been seeing a lot more volatility in baseball this season. We have seen more blowout wins at this time of the year in really like 2 decades. We have seen a lot of 10-plus run wins thus far this season. And I mean, part of it might be the fact that you've got an LA Angels team that they are currently a bottom three team in the big leagues in terms of home base percentage, but they're a top three team in terms of home runs on a per at bat basis. Like coming into tonight, you had Taylor Ward with 20 home runs, but about a 275 on base. You're very O'Hoppy that Mr. Logan O'Hoppy has given you 17 home runs. Not so O'Hoppy that he's given you less than a 270 on base. Like, you've got a lot of guys on this roster that have been so inconsistent about moving the line. Nolan Schunahl has really been the main guy along Zach Neto to be able to find a way on base. And then I referenced it before, and I'll reference it again. Taking a look at these bad, bad bullpens as for the LA Angels entering the night in the bottom four in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. It's been a little bit better for them ever since they picked up Hunter Strickland, who's been pretty rock solid for you, but I mean, it's been up, down, all around with regards to this team. And then on the flip side, you've got a Washington Nationals team that got Kyle Finnegan, who's been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. And also, you've been able to get a little bit of production as well out of Andrew Chafin. And Chafin has not been bad himself. Other than those two guys, pretty much everyone else has north of a 4 ERA. Outside of Hunter Strickland for the Angels, pretty much everyone else has north of a 4 ERA. So you've got a lot of gas can relievers in this game. You've got a game in general that this one might be going relatively far. It's right now 2-2, bottom of the 7th inning. If you get extra innings, that might mean more bullpen usage, and that means more tired arms, and you've got two very untrustworthy starters here. So I do think that this is a good spot for the over, even though it's a high 9.5. Right now, we're seeing that tick up just a little bit with regards to the juice. I'd be willing to go up to a 9.5. 10 is my point of no return, but like that over. And for the Angels, willing to lay up to a minus 122 on that money line, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Eaps Peterson, right here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. And something else that you want to be taking note of, how about what we've got in terms of our NFL betting guide? It is going to be coming out on Tuesday, July 1st. And I tell you right now, I put in there all my projected NFL playoff teams, both in the AFC and the NFC. You're going to be getting that from so many of the VSiN show hosts, guests, and analysts here at the network. You get a ton of futures picks. I've got a few in there. I've also got a week 1 pick that I'm liking as well. And You also get in-depth previews on all 32 teams, season win total breakdowns, best bets, and so, so much more. Kick off your season with confidence. Get full access to every VSiN betting guide, daily best bet emails, exclusive content all the way throughout the season for just $175. Your smartest NFL season starts right now over at VSiN.com/subscribe. That is VSIN.com/subscribe. As it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and it's going to be a fun NFL season, I can tell you that much. And do want to keep you guys abreast of what we're seeing out there on the NBA front as well. We'll be talking about it a little bit more in our number two, but we did see a few moves that happened in the NBA on Saturday, and the biggest move was that the Bulls, they traded Lonzo Ball. He's going to be heading out over to Cleveland for Isaac Okoro, which, I mean, Isaac Okoro, I've been a little bit disappointed by what his NBA trajectory has been. A former top five pick out of Auburn. I remember how versatile and rock solid he was over at Auburn, and just has not really panned out for him. And I mean, legitimately, these are two guys that were drafted in the top five that you just wish their careers would have been a little bit better than what they have been to this point. For Lonzo Ball, it's not necessarily the talent, but it's just the fact that it's like, man, he has suffered injury after injury, and I thought that this was very intriguing. For Lonzo Ball, he's only 27 years old. Now, it's going to be towards the first month of the season that he turns 28 years old, so he will be turning 28 as the season goes along, but you would think with how much we've talked about Lonzo Ball that he would actually be a little bit older than what he is. Now, is he ever going to be the same player with all the injuries that he's had? I have absolutely no idea, but I really like this swing for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, you're buying low on a guy that he was only able to get out there for 35 games the previous year, so I mean, he's had all sorts of issues there. The fact that he was just able to get back out there on the court this season was nice after he missed the entire 2022-23 and 23-24 seasons, and did he look like his normal self this season? No, he did not. The production was a little bit muted. He was coming off the bench in some games. He was starting some games as well. But, I mean, this is a guy that when we saw him come into the league, he was able to do a solid job there. We all remember what he was able to do at UCLA. And just a change of scenery in general for Okoro, I think is going to be able to do him some good. This is one of those rare trades where I look at it and I think that, man, both of these teams might have actually won a little bit with this one for the Chicago Bulls. Sure, maybe they would have gotten a little bit more out of Lonzo Ball had he been healthy, but it does feel like they're looking to be able to go to some of those other backcourt pieces. They needed to get a little bit more versatility on that roster. And with the Cleveland Cavaliers, if you're looking in terms of their odds to be able to win the NBA title, really no change. Last I had checked, this was about a day or two ago prior to this trade. They were hovering right around about plus 850. They're still right there at a plus 850 along with the New York Knicks. They are the two short shots out there in the Eastern Conference. I'll continue to say this. If you're looking at odds to be able to win the Eastern Conference, I do feel like the Cleveland Cavaliers should be the favorite. I wasn't expecting really anything from Isaac Okoro this season for them. And Lonzo Ball, is he going to be able to get out there, give you a whole ton? I don't know, but at the very least, there's upside. And when you've got upside, you know what? You've got yourself a little bit of hope. And there's a lot of teams that have a lot of hope for this upcoming college football season. We're going to be talking about that on the flip side as we've got ourselves a great guest. That is Spencer McLaughlin. He's a play-by-play man for Southern Utah and does great work over at Locked On College Football. He joins me next on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's a new sports betting market in town, and it's called Xcuta. That is X-C-U-T-T-A. Xcuta is a sports Calcutta, combining the adrenaline of live auctions and strategy of sports prognostication. Create your own Xcuta auctions for you and your crew for any sport or any sporting event. Football, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, Super Bowl, World Series, March Madness, Wimbledon, even your own local golf tournament. Create your own private and public auctions. Create secondary market for after buying, market buying, and selling as well. Over 1,000 teams, players, and drivers in the database with the ability for you to be able to add more. Pre-practice auctions now running from 3, 6, and 9 p.m. Eastern Time over at xcuta.com. And for a 3-month free bidding subscription, email support at xcutta.com. Mention VSIN, V-S-I-N, Xcuta, the future of futures wagering, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. For anyone that is sweating out this Angels game, 3-run bomb from Kevin Newman, 6-2. The Angels are in the lead in the bottom of the seventh inning. So that is very much what we like to see. And what else we like to see? College football right on the horizon. Spencer McLaughlin, he does great work over at Locked On CFB. And I know that he does some play-by-play work for the Southern Utah Thunderbirds. Joining me right here on the Progressive Guest Line. And Spencer, great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to be on with you, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me, and thank you for doing the play-by-play work for one of the teams with one of the best mascots out there in all of college as well. So that is
absolutely very... one of the only Thunderbirds in all, I think the only Thunderbird in Division I college athletics out there. It's hard to find a unique mascot. You get a lot of cougars and bears and tigers and all that stuff, but you get a Thunderbird out there, and people turn their head and go, I haven't seen that before, and that's exactly the way it should be.
Yes, it should be. We need more Screaming Eagles. We need more Thunderbirds. So give me all that and give me all the college football. We are getting closer and closer to the upcoming season, Spencer. And I know that you've got some thoughts on the SEC, obviously one of the big bad wolves out there in college football. So let me hear your take on just what you're thinking for the SEC for this upcoming college football season.
Yeah, I think over the last couple of years, Greg, we've really seen a shift in the power dynamic in college sports. And, you know, in the offseason narrative, the Big Ten and SEC grab onto all of those headlines because they have the most expensive media deals. They have the best conferences. They have the biggest brand. They have all of those things going for them. But for a long time, and for most of my life as a college football fan, which dates back to the early 20th century, to date myself on the young side a little bit, or 21st century, I should say, that has been the SEC. And now everyone is starting to get closer because I don't think you would have had a lot of years in the past where the Big 12 champion was as close to the SEC runner-up as they were this past year, where you had Arizona State one play away from beating a team that played the SEC champion Georgia Bulldogs close twice, that being Texas, of course. Like, Arizona State should have won that game. They didn't win that game. There's a controversial call. The calls went both ways, of course, but it was a coin flip game, truly. And I think, you know, for a team that was picked to finish last in the Big 12 this year to go toe-to-toe with Texas is emblematic of how the new world of college football has shifted the power dynamics, has shifted the landscape to where, yes, the SEC is still the best conference. I'm not going to argue against that particular point. I am going to push back against the fact or the idea that the SEC should get such special privileges, that they should be seen as infinitely better than everybody else, that their champion's going to roll everyone. Notre Dame was a good team that lost to Northern Illinois at home. And when Notre Dame and Georgia played on a neutral site in the college football playoff, I watched that game for four quarters like everybody else did. Notre Dame was the better football team. So this upcoming season, it is such a huge year for the SEC. And I think Alabama can go win a national championship. I think Texas, I think Georgia can go win a national championship. But right now the SEC is just trying to get back into that game. They haven't made the game. Forget winning a national championship. They haven't made the game in the last 2 years. And yeah, it's a relatively small sample size. I understand that. However, in the height of the SEC dominance with the Saban dynasty and how good the SEC was, and SEC bias was at its peak and all that sort of stuff, and I think deservedly so, by the way. I don't think SEC bias should be viewed in the same light that it used to be, especially if the SEC misses the title game. I mean, can you imagine, Greg, in any year from 2011 to 2019, the SEC missing the national championship game 2 years in a row? That's not something that was ever feasible. No one ever had that thought. It was impossible. You couldn't see it. Now we have seen it. If they don't make the title, and I'm not predicting that they won't, I'm just saying if the SEC in this world with the NIL and transfer portal era that has changed so many things in college athletics, if they miss the national title game for a third straight year, I think we'll be able to definitively say there has been a constant and prolonging shift in the power balance in college athletics as far as football is concerned.
And I think that it's so interesting that you bring that up as Spencer McLaughlin. He does great work over at Locked On College Football, along with the play-by-play work for Southern Utah. Joining me on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And this is something that I picked up with the SEC as well. How much do you think that perhaps the talent has been redistributed a little bit, where you don't have as top heavy of teams? Because we remember it used to be Alabama and then everyone else, and then Georgia and then everyone else. Because if Georgia still had a solid year this past year, obviously Texas was able to come into the conference. They won it with a 7-1 record within the conference, but there were a lot of teams that had 3-4 losses, and that's just where it seemed like a lot of these teams were. They had a lot of good but not great.
Yeah, I think they do have, I think they still have a lot of great teams, but the difference is I haven't seen in the past years the SEC come together with a dominant team where their champion historically has been so much better than everyone else, where everyone else just can't really keep up. And that's just not the case anymore. And I think you do have an element of it with the transfer portal taking some of the players that were depth pieces that might become starters with injuries, or that were, you know, in key moments or what have you for SEC teams over the years, and redistributing them throughout college football. But I think the other door, the other opening for that particular opportunity in the portal is where the biggest impact has been made. So think about Alabama. Alabama this past year misses the college football playoff. They deserve to miss the playoff. Why? They went on the road and they lost to Vanderbilt. Well, who'd they lose to at Vanderbilt? Diego Pavia. Where was Diego Pavia 3 years ago? He was at the junior college ranks. And then he gets an opportunity at New Mexico State, and that staff gets hired to be the offensive staff under Clark Lee's coaching administration at Vanderbilt. And then Diego Pavia goes out and beats Alabama as a 20-plus point underdog. Granted, they were at home, but still, Vanderbilt beating Alabama is crazy, insane, absurd. You never saw that before. But you saw it last year, not because Vanderbilt took a player or a handful of players predominantly from schools that ordinarily would have hoarded the talent from the high school recruiting ranks, but because they were able to bring in a player who was in college football, in Diego Pavia. And that guy in the last 2 years has beaten Auburn twice and Alabama once. That doesn't happen in 2015, pre-transfer portal. And so there is an important consideration with regards to the caliber of roster an SEC team can build when players that might be depth pieces can leave, and all of a sudden you don't have the same depth you used to, and you can't just out roster everybody and you have to go out coach them, which Kirby Smart did, by the way, this past year, until he ran into Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame, who was on a coaching heater in the postseason this past year. But what you have as well is this is a big country, big, big country with a ton of players. Cam Ward was a zero-star recruit, zero stars in the eyes of 24/7, a service that I think does an exceptional job covering recruiting. He goes to Washington State, then Miami, and is the number one pick in the draft. Pre-portal, that career trajectory doesn't happen. He plays 4 years at Incarnate Word, three or four. He goes to Washington State for one. He's a late-round draft pick and maybe a surprisingly good starter in the NFL. He doesn't go to Miami and lead them to a double-digit regular season in the wins department. He doesn't have them on the brink of making the playoff almost single-handedly because their defense was atrocious. That's where the gap, I think, closes more significantly for schools that are trying to catch those teams at the top. So the schools at the top, the Alabamas, the Georgias of the world, they've been brought down because they aren't able to hoard all of the talent because everybody can pay players with NIL and some players can leave in the transfer portal, but other schools can go find guys that have been overlooked that come and help their current mission to compete at the highest level in college football.
And something to always keep in mind as well, even though you might get a little bit less money, the guarantee of playing time, always paramount. And Spencer, great stuff tonight. Thank you so much.
Hey, Greg, great to talk to you.
Always great to be able to talk some college football. We are going to be getting set for that season sooner rather than later. And coming up next, I have to get set for the Sunday MLB card right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
And we're back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It was great to be able to talk a little college football in the last segment as Spencer McLaughlin does great work over at Locked On College Football. Very interesting. The dynamic change that we've been seeing in college football. Was it perhaps a little bit of a one-off year for the SEC slipping up? Or is it perhaps a little bit more? I think that that's very interesting and going to be very interesting with regards to a point spreads perspective as well. Saw a lot of big-time upsets last season. We'll see if that is going to be a trend once again this year. So big thanks to Spencer for joining me in the last segment. And while we were talking some college football in the last segment, we had a Nationals disaster. By that, I mean the bullpen of the Washington Nationals came into the game, and they have completely lit this game ablaze. It's now 7-2. The Angels are in the lead. Six spot for the Angels, and it could have been worse because the Angels actually stranded the bases loaded. They hit through the entire order plus one. So, yeah, that was not great for the Washington Nationals, to say the least. If you're sweating out this total, it closed at a 9, so you need one more run for the over, and this guy right here bet the over, so you're hoping for that. I also bet the Angels on the money line, so feeling relatively good about that. And you had Kevin Newman go yard. Newman gets his first home run of the season. No, not from Seinfeld, so we shall see what is going to be happening on that front. And how about if we take a look at what we're going to be getting from the other Los Angeles team in terms of what we've got on Sunday, as we've got a few places I have posted up an opener for this game. Now, for the LA Dodgers, it is a TBD starter, mainly because they are most likely going to utilize an opener for this. They have been doing this system a little bit here over the last, shall we say, few weeks. They've got Justin Robelsky typically coming out of the bullpen as a bulk guy, and then they'll insert your favorite opener here. They've used Jack Dreyer a few times. They've used a few other guys as well in terms of mix and match. I know that they haven't used them this year, but Anthony Banda has been utilized for a few starts. So we shall see what that opener is going to be going up against old Chris with the K Bubich for the Royals. And right now, the Royals, very slight favorites. You're going to be finding them at a minus 115. And with this Dodgers bunch, you're going to be getting them right around about minus 105 in terms of places that have this posted up. Total on this game is 9.5, and I actually do like this total under. If you take a look at Justin Robelsky, and this is one of the games that made my VSiN write-ups, so if you go to VSiN.com, you're able to find all of them every single day, and we take no days off with regards to these write-ups, so we've got you guys all covered there. But I did write up the Dodgers on the money line, and I did write up this under, because with the LA Dodgers, I do think that Robelsky has sort of found his footing, for lack of a better term, when he's been coming in as a bulk guy, when he's been utilized in a bulk role, 18 and a third innings out of the bullpen, 196 ERA. ERA well north of 5 when he's been a starter. And there are just some guys like this. Like the Tampa Bay Rays were able to really master this quite a few years ago, and there have been some teams that have adapted it, and there are some teams that they just have no idea what they're doing with the opener. They're throwing out there an opener just for the sake of utilizing the opener, and it's just a case where you're just like, what the heck is going on here? Why do you even try this? It was just a big, giant, flat disaster. Meanwhile, it feels like it's working out quite well for the LA Dodgers, and this is something that they probably want to continue to do moving forward, and they do get to go up against a Kansas City Royals team that is dead last in the big leagues in terms of runs per game at home. Now, do I think that there's going to be a little bit of positivity for this Royals offense? I do. You've seen Bobby Witt Jr. go deep in this series, along with Vinny Pasquantino. Both of these guys, 10-plus home runs thus far this season, and you still have a guy like a Mikel Garcia hitting above a 300, Drew Waters, Kyle Isbell towards the bottom fold. They're hitting at 250, but it's just that lack of power. For the Royals, coming into the series, they were getting a home run in 0.9% of their at-bats at home. So north of 1 out of every 100 at-bats was yielding a home run. I think that they're now up to 1 out of every 100 actually yielding a home run thanks to the series, but and that's been rough. You've had these young guys like Jack Caglione come up. I know that they've got a guy with the last name Rave. I believe it's Jake Rave. Well, it's not been a rave for him at the plate. He's hitting below the Mendoza line of 200. So these guys just have not been able to find their footing. And that's something that you do want to note with a lot of these teams that they bring up their young guys. It takes these guys a little bit of time to be able to find their footing. Like, there's a guy by the name of Mike Trout that once came up to the big league level, and he had to get sent back down to the minor league level. Like, right now we're seeing it with Jackson Holliday of the Orioles. He was up at the big league level last season. They needed to send him back down. Here in time number two, season number two, he's been able to find his footing. It just takes some of these guys, no matter how talented they are, sometimes a trip or two to the major league level, they'll scuffle for like 20 games, they'll get sent back down, and then they come back up, and they rise back up. And honestly, that might not be the world's worst strategy for Jack Caglione with the Royals because he has had his struggles. Now, if you look at more of the advanced numbers, he's hit better than what his average and like his home run power would indicate. He should be able to see a little bit of positivity, but always something that you want to note. And then you got, on the flip side, a Death Star lineup of the LA Dodgers, currently number one in the big leagues in terms of their overall runs per game. Shohei Ohtani continues to do Shohei Ohtani things, 28-plus home runs. He even pitched two scoreless innings here on the game on Saturday. Teoscar Hernandez, along with Andy Páez, have combined for 30 home runs, and Teoscar Hernandez, well, north of 50 RBI this season. You've got Mookie Betts scuffling a little bit this season for Mookie Betts Sanders, but still, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith, these guys give you north of 375 on base. But I really like Chris with K. Bubich. He's been able to give you a sub-225 ERA this season. I recognize he's fallen on some tough times. 3-plus runs allowed in 3 out of his last 4 starts, but still, keeping the ball in the yard. He's given up 4 home runs in north of 91 innings this season. He's backed up by a bullpen that ranks in the top 10 in the big leagues in terms of their ERA. Lucas Hersedge, Carlos Acevez, good 8th and 9th inning duo. And because you did see a blowout that happened here on Saturday, that means that these guys are relatively rested. You're going to be able to go to Daniel Lynch if needed. He and Steven Cruz have been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. And I do think that this is a really good spot for the under. I like the way that Robelski has been rolling out of the bullpen. And even though I do think that the Royals should see a little bit of a come up with their offense, just don't know if it's going to be happening on Sunday. I like that 9.5 under, and I do like the LA Dodgers on the money line, being able to get them as a very, very small underdog. You don't get that very often, and I will take full advantage. And something else that you want to take full advantage of is being able to get proxy service this year for all the great NFL contests that you're able to enter in. Winner Circle Proxy, they've got you covered. You could be a part of the world's biggest football contest with just one trip to lovely Las Vegas. Anytime before the season starts, it is trusted by thousands of players, and over the last 9 years, it has been able to make people a whole heck of a lot of money. Winner Circle Proxy has helped clients win over $9.3 million over the last 2 years. Learn more about using a trusted proxy service that is over at winnerscircleproxy.com/VSIN. All one word with Winner's Circle Proxy, by the way, no spaces in there. As it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. And right now, we are sweating out this over in terms of the Angels versus Nationals game. Men on second and third, two outs. You currently have the 8th inning, so I'm thinking we should be able to get there, but if fifths were fifths, we would all be drunk. So we shall see if the Nationals can cash in for one more run to be able to get us that over. But right now, the Angels, they're looking pretty rock solid on that money line as well. So we shall see on that front. And while we take a look at this game, because it's the only game in town with regards to the late games in Major League Baseball, a little bit more of a top-heavy lineup, shall we say, with regards to this night. How about if we take a look at another game that's going to be happening on Sunday? And this is going to be the early game. You've got yourself the Cleveland Guardians going up against the St. Louis Cardinals. This is your Roku game that starts at 12:05 p.m. Eastern time, and this is 9:21, 9:22 on the card. Logan Allen goes for the Cleveland Guardians. You've got Matthew Liberatore, who's on the bump for St. Louis, and this is a total of 8.5. Right now, the juice is pretty much -110 both ways on the over and under. And with the Guardians, gonna find them as a small underdog, right around even money to +110. Cardinals in that neighborhood about -115, -127. And I took a shot here on the Cleveland Guardians. Now, I got burnt by the Cleveland Guardians here on Saturday. They were up, I believe it was 6-1, and then they completely toil-pulled the game. That was less than tremendous, to say the least, and this has been a Cleveland Guardians bullpen that has really fallen on some tough times in comparison to past years. But again, you didn't have to utilize the high leverage guys. Cade Smith, Hunter Gaddis, both of these guys with a sub-3 ERA. Going to be good to go on this one. Might need a little bit because Logan Allen, about 7 strikeouts and 4 walks, for 9 innings. Has done a solid job keeping the ball in the yard. He's giving up an ERA that's hovering right around about a 4.25. And for Matthew Liberatore, his ERA is a 3.96. I actually really like what I've seen out of Matthew Liberatore, though. He's giving up fewer than 1.5 walks, 0.7 home runs for 9 innings. So he does a good job, for lack of a better term, of keeping things out in front of him. Now, he is backed up by a bullpen that you're not going to have Phil Matone in there. He was utilized for north of 30 pitches in the game on Saturday. And for the St. Louis Cardinals, even though this has been a team that has been quite productive in terms of the overall run scoring, their top 10 team in terms of runs per game, not a lot of power on this lineup. Wilson Contreras is right now leading the way with 11 home runs. You've had Nolan Arenado do a solid job giving you 10 bombs, but I mean, he's not looking like peak Nolan Arenado. You've got Ivan Herrera, a really good hitting catcher, currently on the injured list. So I will say Yosan Pozo, who's been filling in at the catcher spot, he's actually been pretty solid for this team. And for Cleveland, it is a little bit of a top-heavy lineup. Jose Ramirez, Stephen Kwan, both hitting above a 300, have been solid. Carlos Santana's been falling on some rough times in terms of moving the line, getting on base, but he still is able to give you a bit of something-something. But I do believe that the Guardians are going to be able to give you just enough to be able to get to Mr. Matthew Liberatore, get in that bullpen, get the job done. Early game, I think that you're going to see some sleepy bats out there. I like this 8.5 under, and I do like the money line of the Cleveland Guardians. And coming up next, how about if we do continue to break down this Sunday MLB card right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.